Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is surveillance expert Willie Allison. We'll be talking to him in a few minutes. We got a question from a listener emailed to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. He's a blackjack player. He found a good game near where he lives, and he's spreading 1-4 green chips, 6-deck game, 3-2 on blackjacks, double after split, dealer stands on soft 17. He sees regular $1,000 a hand players there with no heat, so he doesn't think he's even noticed. He wants to know if he should be increasing his bet size from more than 1-4, even though it makes him nervous to do so. Richard, what would your advice be?
Well, first of all, he's making a very common mistake, which is he said that if he increases his bet spread, that would increase his variance, which he's very concerned about. But he's thinking about it in the wrong way. The way he should try to increase his bet spread is not by betting more on the higher counts, but by betting less on the lower counts. So rather than playing 1-4 in green, if he moves to a $10 minimum table and bets $10 in the negative counts, now he has a spread of 1-10 instead of 1-4, and his variance will go down, not up, and so give him a higher edge. He left off a very crucial piece of information, which is how deep is the penetration? How much is the casino dealing? And depending, he may be playing a break-even game, he may be playing a losing game, or he may be winning a small amount, depending on that penetration. Hit 17 instead of stand, he very well could be playing a losing game. The other thing, another common mistake that new players make is they think, I'm so small, I'm invisible, and everybody here knows me because I'm a local, and they all love me, and so everything is going to be fine. And just something to remember, write it down, tattoo it on your forearm. No game lasts forever. It might be fine now, and it will be until it isn't, because there will come a day where – you know, maybe you get lucky and you win 3 sessions in a row and you win $10,000 and, suddenly some boss who is looking for a promotion is going to go to the shift manager and say, hey, this guy's a card counter and then it'll be over. So and the other thing is, I would say if you're really going to take this seriously and you really want to try to make money at it, you should invest in the Casino Verite software through QFIT, which you can plug in exactly what the rules are, what your bet spread is, and it'll tell you what your edge is and your win rate per hour and your risk of ruin, depending on your bankroll. So anyway, that's what I would say to him.
Yes, exactly what I would say, yeah. Thank you, Richard. let's talk to our guest, Willie Allison. Has worked in surveillance in countries all over the world. He's now a surveillance consultant and trainer and annually runs the World Game Protection Seminars in Las Vegas. Willie Allison, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for inviting me.
How much have cell phones with cameras and items that look like cell phones changed what players, with or without a dealer's help, can do in a casino?
I think over the last 5 or so years, they've become a major threat in casinos. When you think about it, cell phones are now miniature computers. They video record stuff. They can analyze stuff. You can get different types of apps and so forth. And, of course, the main thing is they can communicate information. And that's probably the biggest threat is people can communicate at the table. So over the last 5 years, we've seen an increase of major scams, especially in Baccarat, in some of the mega casinos in Asia, but also here in the States and around the world, where players in collusion with the dealers, for example, they're video recording shuffles, or they're getting inside information somehow by using the video camera, then analyzing that information and being able to communicate to players at the table. And unbeknownst to management, the players are receiving this information on their cell phone, and they're able to play the cards through sequence information that they have.
And presumably it's going to get worse as cell phones and computers get better.
I think so. I mean, when you look at things like optical character recognition, which is, I guess, a fancy word for video analytics and so forth, some of the manufacturers of cheating devices, mainly in mainland China, they're coming up with ways to recognize scenarios, card indexes and so forth, and simply texting what the processor can see, and sending that information via numerical value or letters back to a simple, like a text. So, yeah, I mean, I can only see it getting worse, to be honest.
You know, this, it's kind of a difficult situation because, you know, casinos want to allow their players to have a good time, and especially the younger generation are just constantly on their cell phones and would like to be updating their Facebook or taking pictures of each other or, you know, those kind of things. And it would be nice to be able to accommodate them, but at the same time, you have that threat to deal with, too. I mean,
yeah,
I think it's a difficult balancing act there.
You know, it's funny you say that, Richard. This year's G2E, the CEO panel discussion, they were talking about how they lure millennials, which is another word for young people, as you know, into the casinos, ideas and thoughts. And one of the CEOs on that panel discussion, he said to the group that he challenged his table game management to find a way to let these people come in and use their phones at the table. Now, I don't quite understand that. Do we really want the players to use cell phones at the table, apart from the obvious things that I've brought up, which is the massive chat threat of cheating? What about things like slowing down the game? Okay. Do other players that actually take it seriously or go to play blackjack or baccarat really want the dude beside him taking stock ticks from their stockbroker or their wife calling, or, you know, looking at their Facebook or updating what their buddies were doing at the table? It's only going to make the game slower. And I personally don't think anyone wants that. I know the casino doesn't want that. Our whole, we make money through as many outcomes as we can get through in an hour. And we make money by having a game that's dealt with integrity and honesty. So it was incredible to me that management in the industry are actually looking to cater to the needs of people who are going to distract the game.
I'm not sure the casinos would be totally against it if it's a choice of having 15 tables with slow games, or they only can fill up 7 tables with faster games. They might, if they can lure more people in, they could make up for the speed.
Right. If you look at the party pits, you know, you have you certainly have stuff going on in the party pits where that's slowing down the game, but it's attracting players that you might not normally get.
Well, you know, no study's been done on that. I don't know about that. Is being able to Facebook and take pictures at tables really going to attract more clientele? I'm not sure about that. I mean, I remember when I first started in the business in the 80s, the whole idea about not having cameras or distractions in the casino was so that players, celebrities, people with a lot of money can go to a place and their privacy is protected and their face playing our games is not going to end up on Facebook or YouTube or anything like that. So there's that issue also that concerns me. And I think there's still, it is one of the places left where you can go and have a good time without any concerns of your mug ending up in some social network website or, you know, on your wife's email.
It sounds like Willie's...
No, but it may wind up in a private network. You'd rather it doesn't.
Yeah, it sounds like Willie's a believer in what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I'm not quite sure that goes. But anyway, okay, a related question. Using these phones, officially it's illegal. Nevada has a device law, and... it's not well defined, but certainly an electronic thing like a phone used to assist you in gambling would be illegal. Now, there's a number of video poker programs you can get on handheld devices that'll tell a player how to correctly play any hand. In Nevada, this is a felony, yet nobody has been prosecuted for it that I know of, and I think I would know. As a surveillance guy, would you conclude that this is because it is considered such a minor sin by the casinos that it's not worth worrying about? Or, since everybody's using a phone in the casino, the ones using this kind of software are just too tough to catch?
Okay, Bob, I'm not familiar with the program or the software you're talking about. I assume it's something like a basic strategy, how to play each hand, is that what it is?
Oh, yes. Well, I can actually show you a picture on my computer, but that's not real good for radio. It's a you can enter in a hand of ace of hearts, king of hearts, 4, 5, 6 of spades, and it will tell you, should I hold the hearts or should I hold the spades?
Okay. Well, look, to answer your question, I'm guessing I've never heard of any arrests or any incidents by casinos where they've had to talk or to somebody or kick somebody out for using that type of software, any type of software on their phones to play any kind of slot machine. But my guess would be that possibly if you know of people that are using that, it's probably not getting picked up. I say that because when you look at casinos, especially in Vegas, right, most casinos have 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 slot machines. It's a lot of machines and it's a lot of people playing them. And generally, the machines are—they're not monitored as much as the table games, right? So those areas in there. So if somebody's in there playing a slot machine and using their cell phone or texting or something like that, I'd imagine it'd be quite difficult to actually pick it up. So to answer your question, I'm guessing that it's probably because it's not being picked up.
All right.
So those same kind of basic strategy. There are basic strategy cards where, you know, instead of it being on a phone where you look it up, it just has a, you know, a basic strategy printed out on a card.
Yeah.
So would you view that differently? If you saw one player who was referring to a card to look up his basic strategy playing video poker and another player who was looking on his phone, would you view those two things differently?
I always default to what the law is in that jurisdiction. And if the law clearly states that you're not allowed to use an electronic device while gambling, whether it's a table game or a slot machine, well, then that's the law. And I'm pretty sure the surveillance directors that I know and the operations I run, that's our job, is to make sure nobody's breaking the law. Now, as far as using it as a basic strategy, remember years ago the apps came out with the basic strategy thing, and the industry got all up in arms about that stuff. And it really made no sense to me because the industry was selling the cards in the gift shops, right? That makes no sense to me. But I do see if the law states an electronic device, who knows if it's it could be something more than just a basic strategy chart on the phone. They could be using their video camera. They could be using it for other things. So I think, you know, we got to be safe about this. You know, we got to assume that if someone rips out their cell phone and it looks like there's a basic strategy chart on a blackjack table, then we've got to ask them to put it away.
Well, it's been a long time since I played blackjack semi-professionally. But then if you had a card with a basic strategy at the table, if you used it, glanced at it occasionally, it was no problem. If you took time, the pit boss would say, speed it up or put it away. But just having the card was not a problem.
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem now. I think that's they're okay with that. Yeah, but again, the electronic device, I mean, hey, put the device back in your pocket and go and buy the basic strategy chart.
Well, they're different. They do different things.
Yep.
But yep. All right, let's move on. Shuffle tracking. On your website, you have a video basically describing how to shuffle track. On this show, most of the players, the blackjack players we've had who are competent to shuffle track and have done it in the past, say that nowadays it's pretty rare to find a shuffle that's trackable. Do you agree?
Well, first of all, awesome. That means the video must be working, right? Because I make the video.
Oh, it's because of the video.
Can I take a little bit of credit for that?
I didn't know it was cart before the horse here. Okay, good.
If I could just go back, I put those videos on the site so they educate the casino people as to some of the countermeasures that you can use and so forth. And if you've seen it, my number one thing is get automatic shuffle machines. But there are some other countermeasures. So if your people or some of the players that have come on have said there's hardly any left, well, maybe it's because of more education now. Now, I think I see their point. There isn't, you know, most casinos now are using shuffle machines. But it's surprisingly, when you travel around the world, there are still casinos out there that for whatever reason, maybe it's economics, they can't afford the shuffle machine. I hear that. It's quite expensive to lease shuffle machines from Shuffle Master. And if they're not making that much money, that's an expense they can probably do without. One of the other interesting things out there, it's kind of ironic, but a lot of casinos will offer, even in this town, in maybe the VIP rooms or the high action rooms, a choice. They'll offer a game to players that don't use a shuffle master, a shuffle machine, as a kind of a courtesy. And the irony is, well, they're the ones that are the bigger threats, right? If you really are a good advantage player or a cheater, those are the tables you're going to hit. But they do it as a courtesy because if somebody comes in and there's $100,000 to spend or so forth, and they say to the marketing host, well, I'd prefer to play on a game that doesn't have a shuffle machine. I want a manual shuffle. Well, generally, especially in the competitive nature of the business nowadays, that person's going to get that. So there are still games out there, but I agree with your players, not as many as there used to be.
Well, Richard, you used to shuffle track. It's more than just being hand shuffled. It is, isn't it, consistency where they hand shuffle it exactly the same way every time and from table to table?
No, it's not so much that. I mean, inconsistency is actually usually good because then you can go pick and choose your dealer, right? And find one who's inconsistent in a way that you like. But the reason it's bad, and I get asked about this by people who are learning blackjack and want to take that next step, and they ask, oh, well, should I learn to shuffle track? And I usually tell them no. It's just because the shuffles are so difficult now, it makes it very easy to delude yourself into thinking that you're playing really well when actually you may be playing at a big disadvantage. And the thing about shuffle tracking is if you're counting cards, you can have somebody sit next to you, and at the end of the shoe, you compare if your count matches theirs, and you can know that you're whether you're playing a winning game or not. With shuffle tracking, well, you don't know, right? I mean, unless you can actually keep track of did the count go down when I put my big bets out all the time? You know, as I say, you could be playing at a disadvantage and not know it. So it's not a technique that I recommend people try to learn.
Yeah, I agree, Richard. I think there's easier ways to make money for advantage players than shuffle tracking nowadays.
Uh-huh. Would you care to share any of those?
How long's the show?
If you're on that subject, as long as you want. The surveillance is a part of casino security, but not the only part. In the Phil Ivey cases in London, Atlantic City, Connecticut, whatever ends up happening in the court cases, presumably the casinos in question would agree among themselves, we screwed up. We should never have allowed this. Now, how much of this blame do you put on surveillance, and how much do you assign elsewhere?
Oh, okay. Okay, let me go back for a second, because the first thing you said was surveillance is a part of security.
Uh-huh.
Can I just set the record straight?
Yes.
It's not. Okay, there's a misconception out there that they're a division of security. In fact, surveillance are generally an independent unit that reports to either the president or, in some cases, like in tribal gaming, the regulators. Okay? And they don't report to anyone operational. And part of their function is to monitor not only gaming and the finance areas, but security. So I know the public sees surveillance as a function of security, and I would agree with that. It is a security function. We don't, I think you said we're a part of security division. We don't deal with that. So what I'm saying is your surveillance people are generally analytical type people that work upstairs in the room, as you know. Mm-hmm. They don't come downstairs for that, and their job is to monitor and report facts, similar to like the NFL. They go to a room in New York now, I think, when there's a dispute, and they call back and tell them what they see from the video. And then the decision is made from the umpires. So that leads me to the next part, was how much blame do I put on surveillance? About a thumb over 0%. Uh-huh. All right. Maybe in some cases that I know of, they can take maybe 5 to 10%. But the ultimate blame, in my opinion, is the casino manager. If you look at some of these scenarios, and I've got to be honest with you, in the almost 30 years I've been in the business, I haven't seen a scam that wasn't the fault of management. In other words, it could have been prevented if procedures were adhered to, their equipment was checked, and people were educated. Okay? The casino manager is responsible for everything that goes on in the floor. And what's happened over the last few years, and it's sort of facilitated things like the Phil Ivey scam, the Don Johnson thing, is, in my opinion, casino managers are listening more to marketing managers and maybe CFOs than they are to the surveillance guys. The surveillance guys only tell them what they see, okay? They're not involved in the decision-making of allowing people to turn cards. They're not involved in the decision-making of where they buy the cards if they're faulty, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not involved with that. So, in my opinion, that's where the blame lays. It lays collectively. There's a lot of reasons, and if you're familiar with the Phil Ivey scam, you know that basically they were able to take advantage of situations through faulty, well, I call them faulty, some people disagree with me, but cards that weren't asymmetrical, they were cut incorrectly, and they were able to take advantage of management who allowed the procedures, and those procedures have been in there for years. They allowed them to change the procedures to facilitate the scam. They pander to the high rollers, and that's how they got it on. So my answer is simply that in most cases, it's not the fault of surveillance. It's the fault of the guys on the floor.
I just want to voice my small objection to the use of the word scam. You know, I don't feel like Phil Ivey scammed them.
Well, how do you define scam, Richard?
They said yes.
Would you agree with me that he conspired in an organized way with a group of people to go in there and use deception to beat the house.
Yes, I agree he used deception.
Well, that's what I call a scam.
To me, I guess it's semantics.
Here's the bottom line with that scam, is he and his crew were the only people in the casino who had inside information of what the next card out of the shoe was going to be dealt. The casinos didn't. That's not the way the game is played. All right, I think you guys would agree. That's not the way gambling is. But he had information of the cards before they were dealt out, and he was able to bet accordingly.
Would you also characterize what Don Johnson did as a scam?
No. And you know what? I might. That happened a long time ago. I'm just trying to remember all the facts. But from memory, Don, again, that was a, you know, casino management listening too much to marketing hosts and VIP hosts in the casino. But he made his money on the back end, I believe.
Right. He was getting a very large rebate.
Yeah, nothing to do with the table games. From what I understand, there was no change of procedures or anything on the game, and the equipment was fine, and that all took care of the South. He was getting incentive on the back end, and that's where he made a lot of money.
Maybe related to the word scam, within the surveillance community, what percentage of surveillance directors considered APs as worthy opponents, and what percentage consider them basically cheats protected by the law? I think Richard was thinking you used the word scam, which automatically puts it in near the category of cheats, because they're kind of related words. And that's the part he was objecting to, I think.
It's the old the line between cheating and advantage player.
Yeah, so well, as a surveillance guy,
yep.
Do you consider APs worthy opponents, or do you consider them sneaky scam artists?
I don't know about worthy opponents. I mean, we honestly, as surveillance guys, I don't think most of us think that way. This is the way I look at it. Surveillance guys have responsibilities. They have to come to work. They have to do their job. They have to monitor the gaming. They have to report. They can't duck out anytime they want or take 5 weeks vacation or anything like that. Advantage players have choices. They have options. They don't have to be in there. They can be anywhere else they want. If they don't like the rules, they can get out. They can come and go. They can go on vacation for 6 months if they want. Right? It's not as adversarial as you think. You know, I mean, I understand the cat and mouse game. You know, that's what we get paid to do, is to see players that are, and I prefer to call them skilled, actually. Skilled player, and bring that to the attention of management. And the management can do what they want, adjust their comps or back them off or whatever they want. That's just common law, right?
Yes.
So that's the way I look at it. Now, as far as worthy opponents, now here's an interesting thing. I surveyed a couple of years ago a bunch of surveillance guys, and in my seminars, I always ask guys how many card counters, if we can just take card counting as an example. How many do you pick up a year? And about the average is across the country is about 5 a year. And then I ask him, well, how many evaluations do you do? Because you probably know most casinos now use software to evaluate if somebody is actually a threat. Okay. And most of them said somewhere between 100 and 150. So if you look at the numbers, for every 30 people that a casino looks at, especially using the software, only one of them is deemed as a threat. And a threat would be someone who's crossed the black and gone into the red. In other words, they long-term are a threat to the casino. So I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of APs aren't as good as what I think they say they are.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree 100%.
Do you agree, Richard? I'm just trying to explain that we, and mainly we get asked to evaluate it because they're winning. you know, bottom line, if somebody's winning in the casino, surveillance is asked to take a look at them, and we look at them, and I'm saying only one out of 30 is actually a worthy opponent. All the rest are, not so much.
Now, I'm assuming a major underlying goal of surveillance is to protect the casino's assets or collect information to allow others to protect the casino's assets. So what would you estimate would be the percentage of money lost by casinos through these three categories of employees, player cheats, or skilled players using advantage?
Okay, if I was to throw like a number out there,
yeah,
I'd go employee theft, and that includes collusion. In fact,
okay,
collusion with a player. In fact, that is the number one thing. If I was going to split that up into a category, I'd put collusion number one. But I'd say employee theft 80%.
Really?
And the other two, what were they? Cheating and advantage play. They can take whatever they want of the 20% of pie left. Whether it's 10-10, I don't know. It depends where the casino is. All right, that. But by far, for me, employee theft.
This is a surprise to me.
Yeah. Not to me. I've been saying that for years. So every year you host the World Game Protection Conference, and when you were talking about when you talk to the surveillance people and you say how many card counters do you actually run into a year, what are they most concerned with? What kind of questions do they come to you with at the conference?
Guys from around the world come each year, and they kind of know what they're going to get, because what we do is we do training, we have the conference, and then we have a thing we call the campfire, which is where we share intelligence for 3 or 4 hours about all the latest concerns and the major threats from the last year. So they know they're going to get that. They don't have to ask a question. Interesting enough, I get more questions on stuff that are more to do with managing stuff, in particular managing the people within the casino, managing the HR director, managing the casino manager, managing the regulators. One of the common questions is, yeah, you know what, we know that's a big threat, but how do I get my casino manager to see that threat and change the procedure based on what we've learned and what we've seen in the news, that he won't do it. So I get a lot of my managers around me, especially on the gaming floor, are old school, and because they haven't seen these things happen to them, they're not willing to make the changes. So I get more questions about how do I influence them from where they sit as surveillance guys or game protection guys. Because unfortunately, over the last 10 years, it's really – game protection used to be pretty big. It used to be the number one. You talk to any old school pit boss or casino manager in this town, you know, guarding the boss's money was the number one, right? But it's sort of – the resources and so forth aren't spent on it as much as it used to be. So the people who run the floor in that don't tend to sort of listen as much as they used to the guys that are actually watching it 24/7. So I get more questions on that, Richard, more the managerial thing.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, we've had a few surveillance people on the show, and they do tend to complain that their department doesn't get the respect, you know, that it deserves. But the other thing that seems like a big change over the last 30 plus years is the pit bosses used to know a lot more about the games, and they were involved in the protection of the games. And that seems to have really gone out the window. A lot of the people in the pit just really don't have a clue at all as to what's going on.
100% agree with you, Richard. I mean, like when I came up, when I first started in this industry, I learned from the old pit bosses and the shift managers. Those were the guys, right? But a lot of them have moved on. A lot of them have gone. And, you know, one of the biggest things that happened was the expansion of gaming, not only across the country, into tribal gaming across the world. So the expertise is very diluted now. And you'd turn around and suddenly a kid who's been dealing for a year is now managing the pit or that. And none of them receive training, not specific game protection training or anything like that. I think if you drove down the Las Vegas Strip and you went into everyone's HR department and showed me the training records of all the pit managers and floor supervisors and that, there wouldn't be much on there. They've just rushed somebody into that position because somebody's left. They're not given the education or information that they need. And one of the tough things nowadays, and I do this for a living, obviously, is the training and the consulting, is they run such a tight shift in staffing levels. They're bare to the bone in terms of staffing that they can't get the time to go and do 1 day, 2 day a week's training. They just can't. So there's certainly, you know, I agree with you 100%. It would definitely help if everyone was on the same page.
What do you think about this move that the last few years of the casinos to eliminate the boxman position on crap games?
Oh, it's, from a game protection perspective, it's terrible.
Yeah, it seems nuts to me.
I mean, hey, what do we have happen this year? The Bellagio crap scam, a collusion scam, you know, and it's still going on, so it's hard to get the details. But it had been, from what I understand from the reports, going on for 2 years. The dealer involved claimed he first colluded with players on a craps table back at the Nugget 20-something years ago. So who knows how long that's going on. I look at that and I go, okay, see, that's not an isolated case. If I get calls all the time where their percentages on their dice tables are going down. Dice isn't as popular as it used to be. And you look at the factors out there. Number one, it's a hard, fast game. Admittedly, it's very difficult to surveil or monitor because you've got three dealers and a box person. And it's a long table and so forth. It's hard and fast. A lot of call bets going on. And to top it off, they're getting rid of the box person. That's the person we need down there looking at stuff, right? So, yeah, what do I think of it? I don't think it's very good at all.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty minor expense compared to what it can cost them.
Yeah, no, I agree.
We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com when we told them that you were going to be here. It relates to surveillance tapes. In general, how long do casinos keep surveillance tapes? Does it vary by department, such as maybe table games are longer or shorter than sports books, or what?
Okay, well, first of all, we don't keep surveillance tapes because we don't have tapes anymore. We've gone digital now. I think when I was here 3 years ago, there was still a ways to go, but most places we record on hard drive. So it makes things a little differently. So to answer your question, the minimum standard generally is set by the regulators. Okay. And the minimum across the U.S. is probably 7 days. In fact, I know it here is here in Nevada. And everybody across the country, if not around the world, they seem to follow those minimums. Now, when I say minimum, that's the bare minimum. In the old days when we had tapes, it was a finite amount. Right? You'd buy 21 8-hour tapes, and that would take you to 7 days. And then you get to the end of them, and then you'd loop them around, right? Now we have hard drive technology, right? So we have to set that under the mandated regulations to a minimum of 7 days, but often it's more than that. Often you'll get for a table 10 days, 14 days, because when there's not activity on the table, the hard drive doesn't record anything. So each jurisdiction differs. I know in some other states it's 14 days. In some countries I've heard of 30 days. But this is all public information if it's a regulated environment. Anyone's curious about it, just Google Nevada minimum surveillance requirements and it's going to tell you because it's law. If you Google Missouri minimum requirements, it's going to tell you.
But now, that doesn't say whether the minimum is 7 days, but this particular casino does it for 21.
No, Well, but it does say minimum seven, so you know it's a minimum of seven. Uh-huh. Then you can take your pick after that, right? Now, the other part of that question was other areas. And again, you'll see that areas, I think, like the cage, for example, uh-huh. I think it's 30 days there in most jurisdictions, so they keep it a bit longer. And then there's the detention rooms. They not only keep it, I think, a little bit longer than that. It might be 45 minutes, don't quote me, but it's a little bit longer. And I believe they keep the audio as well. So, you know, to answer the question, it varies from state to state. That is generally public information. If you want to Google that jurisdiction, it's not going to tell you exactly. You know why? Because we don't know exactly anymore because of the way digital hard drives are formatted. But we must get the minimum of 7 days.
I was talking to a lawyer one time, and he said, you know, whenever you ask for something, often the casino will tell you, oh, we don't have that anymore. It's been more than 7 days. He said, but if you file a slip and fall case that happened 6 months ago, suddenly the video is there, you know, even if it's 6 months old.
Richard, if I can just, you know, casinos are pretty intuitive. If somebody falls, all right, they'll keep it anyway without anyone asking because
right.
it's a litigious society. We've learned over the last 20, 30 years that there are areas that, you know, there's people's safety and danger. And if there's any sort of hint that someone might come back and ask to see the video, we'll keep it. But gaming, not so much. And when you look at video, I did this study years ago. 98% of the time, you only need the last 10 minutes of the video because stuff is reported immediately. All our players are trained to know that if they have a dispute or somebody claims somebody was cheating or that, it pretty much gets dealt with immediately. So keeping it 7 days is, for most part, not necessary, really. So, yeah, it's just through, you know, these are the things you've learned over the years, different things popping up. Hotel lifts, for example, you know, we record them now, or a lot of cases we do, and we might keep them longer if there's a claim that someone got something stolen from a hotel room. Just we need to pull it anyway because we might want to investigate it further. So it just depends on different scenarios.
But you don't have surveillance of hotel rooms.
Not of the hotel rooms, but a lot of casinos, we have the lobby.
The hallways.
Yeah, the hallway. Yeah.
So do you get submitted tapes where a casino says, hey, we lost a lot of money. Can we hire you to look at this tape and tell us if anything went on?
Yeah, I have in the past. You know, I'll often get a call if there's a huge loss. But generally, casinos prefer you to come out rather than sending their email through the mail. But from time to time, that will happen, and I'll just have a look at it. And then in some jurisdictions, they're restricted from sending the video outside their lobby. So I'll fly in and check it out from there.
And do you find that the video is good enough for you? Are you able to see it? Because a lot of the surveillance video that I see, it just seems like far away and not as clear as I'd like. And, boy, I'd like to see other angles.
Yeah.
Are you finding that that's changing, that it's getting a lot better?
It is getting a lot better. I mean, and that's in the last 3 or 4 years. It's because of high-definition video. It's just like our TVs at home when we watch SportsCenter now. You know, it's so much better now. But every now and then, it's more to do with the positioning of the cameras. We use two types of cameras in surveillance, a fixed camera, which is always sitting there looking at the exact view, and then we use the movable cameras, which you probably heard called PTZs. And lawyers and people make the mistake of thinking if there's a dome above it, then everything's recording in a certain perimeter. Well, that's not quite true, unless it's a 360-degree camera, and they're very expensive, and not many people have them. So generally, they're looking at about a 90-degree view of that. So the odds are, I guess, of actually having the video of that area are 1 in 4, right? But generally, the quality of the video is so much better now. Yeah.
We're going to take a short break for commercials, and we got some more questions for Willie about the differences between surveillance in the United States and the surveillance in other countries. South Point has more than 10,000 gains, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. 2 days from now, Thanksgiving, earn double points on video poker, 10 times penny slots, 5 times others, midnight to midnight, no machines excluded. There's no limit on the points you can earn. I do not have the official list of December promotions yet for the South Point, but for the past several years, for the first 3 weeks in December, they've allowed you to use accumulated slot club points, so you get half off rooms, meals, gift shop, bowling center, New Year's Eve shows, etc. at the Palms. The typical Friday night drawings will be a little different in December than they have been for a long time. First, instead of earning double drawing tickets on Fridays from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, which is still in effect the day after Thanksgiving, you earn in December double drawing tickets Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Fridays from 4 to 6. Earning triple entries on Friday between 8 and midnight, that remains. Perhaps the biggest change is the drawing is created because Christmas and New Year's Day fall on Friday this season. So this year there'll be drawings on Saturday, December 26th, and Saturday, January 2nd, rather than on the holidays themselves. There will be a mystery multiplier on three separate dates, December 3rd, 13th, and 17th. On each of these 3 days, swipe at the kiosk and get a multiplier from 2x to 15x. There's a limit of 40,000 adjusted points per day on video poker and no limit on reels. What I think the cap of 40 of adjusted points per day means, if you get a 2x multiplier, you may earn 20,000 points and get them multiplied. So the extra 20 they give you makes 40. If you get a 3x multiplier, you may play 13,334 and get them tripled. If you get a 4x multiplier, you may play 8,000 points and get them quadrupled, etc. So it is the normal points plus what you get in the multiplier goes up to 40,000. 40,000 points, by the way, is $100 in free play. PFP, play for prizes, until this Friday, Albertsons gift cards. November 30th through December 4th, players receive free slot play. December 7th through 18th, TJ Maxx cards. And from December 21st to January 1st, you earn cash, up to $190 a day. You keep the points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. You sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year. It allows you to get correction on most games. Quick Quads, this is really the only place to get correction on Quick Quads. That will be my game of choice at South Point in 2 days on Thanksgiving Day. And I visit the videopoker.com website for correction. They have weekly contests. Well, they actually have daily, weekly, monthly contests. The weekly one this time is Wheel Poker with Quick Quads. Wheel Poker and Quick Quads are each individually successful games, so this game combines them. It's a 7 coins per line game, which means you pay 1 extra coin for the wheel spin and 1 extra for the Quick Quads feature. We talk about Quick Quads a lot on this show, so today I'm going to concentrate on the Wheel Poker aspect of the game. When you get a 4 of a kind or a Quick Quad, you get to spin a wheel, which adds somewhere between 60 and 2,000 coins to your score. The wheel is very likely to be random, but not equally weighted. That is, getting the 2,000 coins on the wheel is much less likely than getting the 60 coins. To figure out the strategy, you need to get an estimate for what the wheel is worth. Let's say you calculate through experience that it's worth an average 150 coins. I just made that number up. I can't tell you that's what it is. Then you add 150 coins to the value of each quad and quick quad. So instead of 400 for 4 deuces, consider it as 550. Instead of 800 for aces, consider it as 950. Now, using the software from videopoker.com allows you to practice, but only for the fixed games. For this one, you need to go to the wizardofodds.com. There you can add any size for any of the entries, and it will calculate a strategy for you. All right. We're talking to surveillance expert Willie Allison. Our next question is the distinction between advantage player and cheating must depend on the laws. For example, years ago, using concealed computers was legal, so players do it were APs. Today is not legal, so players doing the same thing are cheats. What kind of things have you noticed are legal in one state but not another, or legal in the United States but not in certain other countries?
I think I was saying earlier that most jurisdictions and even other countries, they write their legislation, their regulations and cheating laws based on Nevada. So there's not many things that I can think of offhand that are different. The main difference is different countries, either they have cheating laws or they don't. It's kind of that simple. And I'll give an example. I worked in Argentina for a little while, and then 2002, 2003, and I just got there, and I'd come from Australia, which is highly regulated, very strict rules and laws, and I think it was like the first night I was there. We had a team of card markers on one of the poker derivative games. It was pretty conclusive, straightforward. The guys called me into the monitor room. We were going to take action, call the police in and so forth. Then they kind of looked at me and went, "What do you mean?" And I'm like, "Well, they were cheating, right? It's pretty cut and dry." And it turns out, though, and I hadn't been there long enough to actually even look at it, there was no cheating laws.
Uh-huh. So they weren't breaking the law.
Uh-huh. So that's what I find is different. There either is laws that are very similar to Nevada or there isn't.
Wow, that's kind of pretty amazing, actually. That
is it legal for casinos to bust their head in lieu of not having a law against it?
Yeah. What happens in the casino stays in the casino.
Okay. All right. We got about 30 seconds for you. Do you spend more time consulting in the United States or foreign casinos, and how are they different?
Probably a little bit more overseas. The main difference is, and I'm talking specifically about the Asian casinos, Singapore, Macau, those parts of the world. The difference is size. The revenues generated by the mega casinos and countries over there is humongous. So that's really the main difference.
All right, Richard, we have about 30 seconds left. Why don't you take us on home?
Okay, we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. And to get an archive of all the old shows, go to bobdancer.com.
All right. We thank you, Willie Allison. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. Money.